and welcome to a CRIG podcast. CRIG, the Common Repository Interface Group, is funded by the Joint Information Systems Committee. The next podcast is on object interoperability within repositories.
If I could ask people to keep it quite brief, say 1 to 2 minutes. So I'll start. My name is Mahendra Mahay. My job title is Repositories Research Officer, and I'm based at UConn at the University of Bath. I'm also the chair of this session. What does my role involve? Well, it originally involved supporting 25 projects within the JISC Digital Repositories Program, which started in 2005. And part of my role was, part of my job description was to provide advice and guidance and help exploit synergies across the Digital Repositories Program and beyond, and look at synthesizing some of the project outputs. Also, it involves liaising with other national and international repository activities, dissemination activities presented at various conferences and workshops, and we've been scoping various pieces of work. The latest is some work we've been doing on something called a repository ecology. I'm particularly interested in interoperability, and particularly how digital objects and content packages can be exchanged amongst systems such as digital repositories. So that's me, and if I could now hand over to Richard Jones to just give a brief introduction.
Hi, yeah, I'm Richard Jones. I'm from Imperial College London. My job here is as a repository systems engineer. I'm basically been working on a heavily integrated and distributed repository system for Imperial College, which is being embedded into an existing kind of information architecture. What this means on a practical point of view is that I have several repository nodes which are connected together and connected to other systems in a variety of relatively complicated ways. So this has a natural attachment to interoperability, because one of the prime problems I came across when I started to do this work was that there aren't actually any good standards or any good methodologies for doing this sort of thing in the repository environment. In addition to that, I'm a core DSpace developer, and I'm a member of the Architecture Review Board that's looking at the future of DSpace architecture. This is good stuff, because interoperability between information systems and especially repository systems is going to require that the systems interoperating have at least some common understandings about the architecture of their objects. So I'm interested in seeing what people's thoughts are and how digital objects are structured and moved around, and what that can do for the DSpace point of view. And from another perspective, I sit on the LAI ORE Technical Committee, which is a project which could significantly aid some of these interop efforts. So I'm interested in the relationship between what people really want to do and what the ORE technology or specification can do towards that.
Okay, thanks, Richard, for that. And now, could I ask Richard Green just to give a brief introduction?
My name's Richard Green. I'm an independent consultant working with the University of Hull. I've managed, or I'm managing, three repository projects, the first of which RepoMan has just finished, and we've now moved into RIDER, which is in fact specifically about interoperability in some senses, and REMAP, which is a follow-on to the RepoMan project. And what RepoMan and REMAP have been looking at is using repositories as workspaces as well as places to display finished objects. And as part of that, we need to be able to move objects from one part of a repository to another. And to be honest, it's really between two different repositories. So this idea of being able to have one repository talk to another and seamlessly transfer things is very important to what we're doing. To do that, we're using the Fedora repository software, which, whether it's a good thing or not in the context of this conversation, has an extremely flexible internal architecture for its objects, and therefore actually potentially makes transfer quite difficult.
OK, Okay, thank you, Richard. And Chris Orr, can you please give us
a direction? My name is Chris Orr. I work as integration architect at the University of Hull, and also as advisor, well, as part of that, as advisor on the three projects that Richard Green mentioned, Repoman, Remap, and Rider. I also sit on the GISC Repositories Preservation and Preservation Advisory Group, which was formed to oversee and guide the Digital Repositories Program and the subsequent repository programs deriving from that up to March 2009. My own interest in terms of interoperability reflects those stated already. To a certain extent, thinking through this session, I was quite interested in the idea of how objects themselves might interpret interoperability and how they might relate to each other without necessarily, well, in the context of a repository or even independently of a repository.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Okay, as I said, I've received a few questions from a few responses from my email about possible questions that we could ask to start off this discussion. And I've had a little bit of, I've thought about this a little bit more, and I think it might be a good idea to start off with a question that Chris sent a couple of hours ago, which I'll introduce the question, and then maybe if further clarification is required, maybe Chris, you could maybe give a bit more background information to why you asked the question, and then shall we say it's sort of a free-for-all for anybody to contribute?
Okay.
So this is the question, please correct me if I've misquoted you, Chris. If we agree that interoperability is a good thing, do we have the necessary tools to implement the different levels of interoperability that are required? Is that the question that you asked, Chris?
It was. The question was asked in the context of the email that Richard sent round, I suppose, where one of the suggestions in that was that if you look at different layers of interoperability, there are tools or standards that can enable different levels. I suppose the question is whether or not we have efficient and sufficient tools to help implement those standards to achieve the different levels of interoperability we wish to achieve. So for instance, at a communications level, we, as Richard mentioned, we know we have HTTP, we have SOAP, we know how to implement them, although there may not be enough tools to help us implement them as quickly or as in quite in the way we would like. When it comes to a different level of interoperability of exchanging content in a particular structure, which application profiles can be used, such as SWAP, then they're almost too new, and there aren't tools available at the moment to enable us to easily implement these. So that I suppose the basis of the question is that we seem to have many of the standards that allow us to put in place interoperability, although I was interested in the comment Richard made earlier. But one of the main barriers seems to be, do we have the ability to actually implement them in the way that allows us to achieve the interoperability we seek?
Richard, you've had some practical experience of doing some of this. Do we have the tools for the different levels of interoperability that we require? I mean, you've actually had a go at doing some of this.
Mm-hmm. We sort of do and we sort of don't, and herein lies really the problem. I mean, as Chris said, I break this particular package interoperability problem down into kind of four layers, which is, first, there is how are we going to communicate about these packages, as in, are we going to use HTTP, for example? And then I break it down as to how are we going to talk over HTTP, what language are we going to use over HTTP to describe what we're talking about? So, for example, SOAP would be a web service language which we will use to transmit over the HTTP protocol. to communicate between two systems. And then we get down into what the package is that we actually put inside this SOAP object. And we have package formats in METS and IMS and so forth. And then we have the need to understand inside that package what it is we actually are looking at. So inside our METS package, we might have a Dublin Core record. But a Dublin Core record is, although getting close to the essence of the metadata record, is in fact only as good as your knowledge of how to interpret that Dublin Core record. And this is what the swap profile does for us, is start to talk about the profile of that metadata, if you like. So we have the tools at each level. What we don't have at each level is ways to negotiate which of those tools we're going to be talking about. So how do I say to you that I'm using swap when I talk about my Dublin Core metadata? Or how do I say to you that inside my METS package is some Dublin Core that is in a swap format? And these are the bits that are really missing on a kind of general interoperability layer, I think. So we have tools and we have standards which can be used to interoperate, but the essence of interoperability is not whether there is a standard which will do it, but how both sides of the fence know which standard they're talking about and have a common understanding of it. And that's kind of what I see as the core of the problem. And the tools to allow us to negotiate that rocky road, if you like, is the bit that I'm really interested in. Does that clarify what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what sort of practical ways can we solve these?
If you're looking at the field, looking at the interoperability, say using web services, is that the sort of thing that might then get solved if you were to employ something like WS messaging, which actually
the problem is always kind of a regressive problem in that if we employ a system such as WS messaging to allow us to make certain kinds of negotiations, how do we then know that we all commonly understand the WS messaging process? I know that's a kind of slightly abstract in an argument, but this I think is the what underlies your question about what do we have the sufficient tools to achieve these different levels of interoperability, which is at what point do we stop going, well, actually, we need to describe how we talk about these things. How do we talk about the process that we use to discuss the actual data that we're going to be exchanging? Does that make sense?
Does it mean that at some point we have to admit almost that a system can't do it for us and we need some form of human-readable or policy approach which actually creates that common environment through which the systems can then interoperate?
I think that may be the case. I mean, it may be that there is a way around this kind of infinitely regressive problem of describing what it is that you're talking about, because eventually you have to describe the language that you're talking about the data in, and then you have to describe the language that you're talking about the language that you're describing the data in. So yes, at some point you have to lay down a framework which says what the outer limit of the interoperability is, and everything within that limit we might be able to attack. But as you push back that boundary of what we're talking about, it gets harder and harder to make systems which will actually talk to each other.
This is one of your questions that you actually asked as well, which is kind of leading on to this, but it was, what is the practical limit of interoperability? Because, you know, at what point do you say, this is sort of infinitely regressive problem, you know, where do you stop?
Yes, that's right. So we have, going back to Chris's question, we have tools to do each of these levels of interoperability, but what we lack then is tools to regress, if you like, through this chain back towards some practical limit. Let me give you an example. Suppose we want to talk meaningfully about which application profiles we support. Then we actually need another layer of interoperability which allows two systems to discuss what kinds of application profiles they support for their, which they can then apply to the data which they're going to give to you.
That is akin to pick out a very old way of doing it, the Z3950 explain request.
Yes, could be, but that would not necessarily allow you to negotiate. I don't know, the details of Z3950 are not something I know a lot about.
Well, it's, I mean, The explain request essentially allows you to understand how a particular server or repository has configured itself or has been configured.
So that uh-huh.
Or set the level of your interaction and interoperability with it. It is dependent on what you get told. You can't actually then say, well, actually, could you do this instead?
Okay, so that's kind of an interesting... that's a point that you could be laying down a limit then on what is interoperability. You could be saying, here are the formats I support. We will either take it in this format or you won't take it. Or you could push the boundary of the interoperability back a layer and say, let's talk meaningfully about the formats that we both understand and make a decision as to which one we're going to transmit, which adds additional flexibility at the cost of additional complication.
Agreed. I wonder if this is indicative of a wider issue about where repositories do implement any of the different standards at different levels of interoperability, that we are not good generally as a community in informing others how we have done it, which by its very nature then limits the ability for interoperability to take place, except where there is very close communication between one repository and another repository or an associated service. That's more of a cultural thing. I just wonder whether it's an issue that we need to address more fully about encouraging people to make it clear how they have implemented different standards at different levels.
Oh, I thought someone was going to respond there.
I was thinking.
I think that is a general problem, and it is a social problem with interoperability. I mean, to a large degree, we could solve interoperability tomorrow if we could get everybody to sit down and agree that they will only exchange this kind of data in this kind of way, and that would be a general solution to the issue. And the problem is that you can't actually. Even if you communicate to people how you have actually done something, it doesn't mean to say that they will either agree with you or be able to do so, or do the same sorts of things with their data. So interoperability demands a kind of degree of flexibility and the ability to support multiple ways of achieving the same sorts of things to increase the number of systems that are likely to be able to communicate with each other. But the idea of a kind of generalized interoperability is definitely well outside the practical scope.
Agreed, and in a sense, I would agree that you need to have the multiple interfaces in order to maximize your opportunities of interoperability. I suppose that one of the dilemmas is that in looking to implement multiple interfaces, it's the priority has been on implementation rather than on explaining how that implementation has taken place. And there's a need to address that balance. Moving on, given that we all have our own ways of implementing standards, albeit that those ways may be individual or they may be adhering to a community initiative such as SWAP, is there any basis for using the approach of a registry to allow people to actually register how they have implemented these standards, so that at least there is a public statement of how repositories have implemented different standards, which would at least facilitate interoperability at some by allowing others to understand how they should be interoperating with that particular repository.
I mean, these registries exist already. For example, IEMSR. Are you all familiar with that?
Yes.
So, I mean, I think the repository...
I'm not, but I'm on the internet, so I will be in a moment.
As I understand it, it's a place where you can actually register your application profile And I think the problem is that, well, not enough people know about it, that's the first thing. And getting people to actually submit things, I suppose, another thing. And how it actually works in terms of interoperability, you know, how is it actually being used and what tools are being developed to actually use it. But I think these things do exist, so maybe this is a people problem more than anything else.
They exist, but an interesting case about the IMSR is that, as you say, not that many people know about it, and therefore not many people are using it. It seems to me that if people want to find out about the repository, their first port of call would be to look at how that repository is accessible, and therefore we'll look at the different service interfaces that that repository has. And in a sense, you almost need to tie in the detail of application profiles behind the services that people would be interested in, because that's almost one step down. You first want to identify how you can interact or interoperate with the repository, then you will step down a level and understand the detail of exactly what that implies in order to achieve a greater degree of interoperability.
I think there's potentially a level below that as well, if I may, Chris. Once you sort of get inside the repository, you need to know yet a little more. I mean, we're talking about interoperability as if we know what it is that we're doing, that we know that what we want to move around from one place to another is a simple object, however we might define that. And surely that is where you would start if you try to implement this. But we know that actually once you start getting into the detail of repositories, then objects can be very complex things. They can be complex in the sense that you have a compound object made up of many simple ones, but even within a simple object there can be multiple data streams which you coming in as an outsider may or may not have permission to use. And interoperability will require some sort of way of being able to express that very fine detail. I mean, as I said, it's not where you're going to start, because it's going to get horrendously complex, but before you can make any sort of start, I think you need to know where it is you're trying to get to in the end, and you've got to have an eye on that detail, even though you might not get involved with it to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true, and something I'm very interested in. We had a lot of issues here with kind of decomposing objects into their various components and moving those components around instead of actually moving packages. In fact, it's impossible in the system that we have here to move packages around, because those packages don't exist until very, very late in the kind of repository workflow process. So what we actually do is we assemble our digital objects, both what I say I call temporally, as in over a long period of time, and spatially, meaning from a variety of different systems. So the concept of packaging goes out of the window, and we have to start talking about all of the elements of our repository objects on a fine-grained level already. And this is what led me to say at the very beginning of this that we didn't find any interoperability standards which were capable of doing what we wanted to do, because, as you rightly say, there aren't any standards that can address this sort of level of complexity. But it is something I'd be interested in seeing happening.
Although somewhat artificial in terms of spatial positioning of repositories, is that because perhaps most of the standards developed, or most of the initiatives looking at interoperability, have assumed that the repositories between which they are looking to achieve interoperability are not necessarily co-located, and there hasn't been as much investigation into the internal management or internal management of a repository infrastructure, such as within a single institution. I know that Herbert van der Sompel's Adore infrastructure is within a single institution, and that's in a sense an example of how you can manage things internally. But generally speaking, interoperability initiatives tend to be looking outward rather than as regards internal management?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think maybe the two words that people use, which they assume mean different things, but actually really are integrally related, are interoperability and integration. So people would describe what I've done here as an integration problem.
Yeah.
But in reality, it would have been made a lot easier to integrate if my systems could interoperate at a highly granular level, if that makes sense as a description. So I think the other assumptions that have been made is that interoperability is about moving packages, which of course it's not. It's about moving information, and that information doesn't have to be a complete package. And or certainly all of my problems stem from the fact that I can't package, because I obtain some data from one information system, some data from another information system, and I add new data to it as it passes through a workflow and send it to yet another system. So interoperability could easily look at more general ways of just shifting this sort of data.
As an example, how do you manage the movement of those components within your internal architecture at the moment? How do you, how do you know where they come from, where they're supposed to go? Do you have a sort of system of identification to help manage that?
Yes, we do. It's fairly arbitrary. I mean, we were largely making this stuff up as we went along because we didn't have any kind of guideline. But yes, we have kind of what you might call pairing identifiers. So identifiers which are common between two systems but are not necessarily common across the whole network. So if you're tracking an object's provenance, you need to hop from one system to the next, find out what its identifier for the other system you're going to talk about is, and follow that link. But also we have a fairly well-defined architecture, which means that it's fairly easy to see from looking at an object and looking at the provenance information that we attach to it, where it's all the bits of it have originated from, and who was responsible for it.
I'm interested in your idea, Richard, of not attempting to deal with packages, but actually to worry about the information content of the repository object, and perhaps that's something that, as a community, we ought to talk about more and explore further. Because if you are, I had previously been thinking that you had to somehow deal with the internal complexity of a particular repository object. If you take the attitude that perhaps you've just suggested, that actually, no, I'm not going to bother with that. All I want to be able to do is take out its information content, make sure I've got all the relevant bits, and then reassemble it somewhere else, then potentially that's actually an easier process. But it begs the question of the new object that you create, is it in fact an accurate and sufficient reflection of the first?
Yes, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I would propose as a starting point for answering that question that the objects that you have in your new system, which has acquired data from some other system through this mechanism of acquiring information on a granular level, the object that you have there is the object that it wants, and that it's not exactly the same as the object in the repository that it pulled out might not actually matter.
No, I can see that. I think that's something that when we perhaps meet to talk about these things again, we ought to discuss, because potentially it's a much simpler approach to the problem.
I think it could be. I'm going to reserve judgment on whether it turns out to be simpler or not, but it's certainly an approach that I want to see investigated, because it's to me, that's where interoperability is going to happen, because we have many mechanisms and packaging formats now. There are plenty of ways of doing these things, but we have no way of talking to each other about what's in our packages. And in some way, a process which allows you to just talk about the information regarding the digital object could address both the packaging problem and the problem of assembling and deconstructing objects through an interoperability, I'll call it an interface, because I don't really know what it is, and provide a more general solution for talking about these sorts of things.
You would just have to be very clear what it was you wanted to take out and why you wanted it, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would, and you'd have to, and it's for stuff like this that knowing about the profile of the data, or being able to specify the profile of the data would be really important. So, let's have an example where I'm talking to a repository system about an object, and my only interest in that object is its title. To request the title of the object assumes that the target repository and myself have the same understanding of what a title is. In reality, what we need to do is we need to tell the repository that we're talking to, this is the way in which I'm about to speak about the data that you've got. Please reinterpret your object in terms of this common understanding of how we talk about the information of objects. So we would definitely need a way to talk about the profile of data, and that, I think, is really important. That's why I think the swap work is so important. And if we can find ways of talking generally about application profiles, I think we'll make a big step forward.
Isn't the work of Ramlet doing something like this? I think they've done some mapping with different schema, and I think the most common element was title, actually. I remember Wilbert's presentation. I don't know if anybody, does anybody remember that? But they've done some work in this area, looking at different standards and trying to come up with a protocol. Is that right? Have I misunderstood that?
The Ramlet initiative itself is developing a number of RDF mappings so that you can essentially translate any package into the Ramlet RDF and then map it back out again into another type of package. So you could convert, say, a METS package into an IMS package. Potentially very useful. Interesting that the last time I looked at their website, one of the pieces of information I saw on there was that however much they try to avoid information loss in doing this mapping, they've had to admit that it's impossible not to suffer some degree of information loss. And they were focusing more on how you quantified that and how you conveyed that to the end repository. About what information loss there may have been, so that the end user of the final package is aware of something they may not have.
Richard Jones, have you actually looked at implementing swap?
To some degree, yes. Not here, but on another project that I've worked on, the SWORD project, I wrote the DSpace implementation, basically, of the SWORD interface. And our working data set was a Dublin Core XML document embedded in a METS document. And the Dublin Core XML document was in the style of a swap record. So the default for DSpace's ingest process is to accept a METS document containing a swap Dublin Core record. So I've had a look at it. It's quite cool. I quite like it.
I mean, can the architecture handle relationships between objects? I mean, what questions does that pose about the architecture?
I am not as expert in it, or I'm not actually expert enough in it to be confident about answering that question in a definitive way. What it seemed to me was that there is relational information in there. I haven't tested its limits, so I couldn't tell you whether it's good enough for what we might want to do in the full kind of run. Or at least the Dublin Core XML certainly understands about these relationships, and I think they come from the swap profile.
Yeah, I think that's one of the problems. We've been implementing a repository for the JISC information environment, and we were using ePrints, and we were looking at implementing the swap profile, and the deeper we dug, the more we realized it was asking some fundamental questions about the architecture of the repository software itself, whether it could actually handle these relationships. So basically we haven't implemented it yet because we haven't answered those questions.
Yeah, actually, Now you mention it, that does ring a bell, because my example work for SWORD is deliberately simple, because there was relational information that doesn't have an obvious analog in DSpace. So I did gloss over some of the slightly trickier bits, mostly to save time on having to actually learn how it all works.
Chris and Richard, sorry. Have you experienced a similar problem with Fedora, or is it sufficiently flexible to be able to cope with relationships between objects?
No, Fedora is very good at coping with relationships between objects, but as I said when I introduced myself at the beginning of this session, potentially that gives you a problem for interoperability, because you can set up objects with so many relationships, either internally or with other objects, that if you then try and take them out of the Fedora repository into something, dare I say, simpler, you've got a real problem trying to map them.
Of course.
I mean, that sort of it is similar to a point I wanted to make about the discussion we've just had, and that is we're talking about moving things around in packages, be they METs or whatever. And fine, in terms of moving stuff into a new repository, many of the pieces of repository software have got facilities for dealing with a METS package or an IMS package or whatever it may be. They're not so good at exporting them in that format. So if you say, I would like this object that you've got and I would like it in a METS format because that's what I really understand, it may be that the first repository can't do that.
ePrints is quite good. It has quite a lot of export formats.
Right.
But the problem is, if that data isn't being captured at ingest, then obviously when you export it, it's not going to be available then. I mean, I'm still thinking about swap, but yeah, I mean, ePrints does have quite a few export formats in version 3.
Right. It would be interesting to see how good. But, I mean, presumably the export package is assembled when you ask for it. It would be interesting to do some work on on information loss again. How much does it manage to export?
Okay. I think what that is an example of is that we've talked about some of the packaging formats and other methods of exchanging information content outside of packages. A lot of discussion can be about how to do this in principle and how to do this in theory, because there is not widespread implementation of software that can enable the object interoperability that we talk about. And it makes it very difficult then to actually test such interoperability on a wide basis. There's a need there in a sense to ensure that interoperability discussions involve repository developers and there are the opportunities to enhance those repository systems in order to be able to test out the interoperability that the specifications seek to enable. There's no good having discussions take place on two parallel tracks. And I know the JISC has been very good in general about trying to bring them together. But I think the discussion we're having reinforces the need for that to take place so that you can effectively demonstrate what we are talking about.
On that note, actually, I'm going to sound the five-minute bell. So, Mahendra, maybe if you want to kind of sum up how far you guys have been taking notes, and you guys have crossed quite a field. So, really good discussion. Very interesting to listen to. But, about 5 minutes left, please.
So you want me to give a summary? I can remember everything
that we said. Whatever way you feel, really, honestly, I don't mind.
Yeah, maybe what might be useful here is to sort of come to some kind of conclusion from some of the points that people have made. I mean, the last point that Chris made was that if we're going to talk about object interoperability, we need lots of examples to demonstrate how this is actually happening. It seems that we've got the tools. We've got some tools at certain levels, and we need to be able to demonstrate that. Is that what you were saying, Chris?
I suppose so. I mean, having said that, one of the frustrating aspects about the discussion around Krieg scenarios earlier this year to inform the call that just put out was that no one actually had a project funded under any of those scenarios. And I know there's been discussion since then about whether those scenarios were then too detailed, whether they addressed the wrong thing or whatever. And of course, the next teleconference is going to perhaps look at that in a bit more detail. But I suppose recognizing that there are a number of tools out there that to enable different aspects of interoperability, there needs to be some way of bringing them together to help demonstrate how you can achieve even the most basic aspects of interoperability without necessarily considering more complex or more detailed scenarios.
And Richard, you were making the point that we need a clear way to for repositories to articulate their implementations of their application profiles. Is that correct?
Yes, roughly. Or there needs to perhaps be a way that repositories can talk about, in a machine-to-machine way, the application profiles that they do or can support, so that you could ask a repository to give you Dublin Core in a swap format or in some other application profile.
And what was your point about content packaging? Because you were making a point that you're more concerned about the content than the actual package itself. So packages.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say in a summary is that we have a proliferation of ways of giving repositories or other information systems strings of ones and zeros. There are the SOLD project will do it. BSpace has the lightweight network interface which does it. To a large degree, you can build your own based on some DSpace tools. What I really care about in terms of interoperability is what's in those ones and zeros. So any kind of packaging endeavors need to address what's in the package rather than just how we move the package from one system to another. And that led us on to talking about decomposing these packages and being able to talk between information systems, not just repositories, but information systems in general, about the information that they contain on a more granular level.
Okay. And Richard, you were making the point about interoperability generally. Is that correct?
Same, Richard.
Richard Green, sorry.
Yes, I think the point I wanted to make was we need to know why we want to interoperate. Only then can you decide what it is you need to pass around the place and how. And there may be different answers in different places at different times. It's a fundamental question that we need to understand before we can go anywhere near trying to implement it.
Okay. Are there any other points anybody wants to make?
Going, gone.
Actually, sorry, I had one very, very last point, but maybe this is opening a can of worms that we shouldn't. I was just reading through your email, Mahendra, about with some other test questions, as it were, and one of your points says, shouldn't repositories be object-driven, which is an interesting point, which doesn't, which is good for most, I would say, implementations of repositories, but what about data set repositories? This is clearly a can of worms. I should never have said anything. let's note as a closing remark that data set repositories have interesting problems for interoperability, especially that the idea of an object in a data set repository is a woolly concept in itself, especially when you have continuous data sets which have processing applied to all or part of that object, and perhaps even stacks of processes applied to all or part of those data sets.
Yeah, and they all have some of them have very, very complex metadata application profiles to describe them as well.
Yeah.
And others have nothing. I think one of the questions I was hoping Brian would join us and maybe he could contribute to this, Brian Matthews, but was some of the work that's been done at Bath is developing something called a R drive where research data is thrown into, and it could be all sorts of different kind of research data sets, and there's looking at the feasibility of using Dublin Core to describe these very, very heterogeneous data sets and whether that's a useful thing to do or not.
Thank you for listening to this Crigg podcast. To hear more Crigg podcasts, please use your favorite search engine to search for the tags Crigg and podcast. Cheers.